The Retaining Employment and Talent After Injury or Illness Network, known as RETAIN, is a joint initiative led by the U.S. Department of Labor's Office of Disability Employment Policy, referred to as ODEP. RETAIN is funded by ODEP, the Employment and Training Administration, and the Social Security Administration. RETAIN focuses on stay-at-work, return-to-work strategies for ill and injured workers so they can remain in their jobs or the workforce through timely, coordinated supports and services. Today's event is presented to you by the RETAIN Technical Assistance Provider at the American Institutes for Research.
We're glad you could join us today. My name is Jamar Nellums, and I'm the project director for RETAIN TA, which is housed at the American Institutes for Research. And today, I'm here with Dr. Julie Jacobson-Van, who is going to introduce the concept of motivational interviewing, which is a counseling and communication approach. Dr. Jacobson-Van, as always, it's a pleasure to talk with you and have you share your expertise with the RETAIN Network.
Thanks, Jamar. It's great to be here and discuss this topic with you and our audience.
So you and I have had some previous discussions about the value of motivational interviewing. And although today's discussion will primarily stem from a healthcare perspective, I did want to note that it's important to note that as a technique, motivational interviewing can also be applied within a workforce development setting. And in this respect, it has value across roles within RETAIN, including the return to work coordinators, physicians, nurses, rehabilitation counselors, and others. But let's start the discussion with what is motivational interviewing and why is it important for RETAIN projects?
Motivational interviewing is a technique or style of counseling that is patient-centered. It aims to help patients or clients explore and resolve their ambivalence about behavior change. Often people have mixed feelings about the need to change behavior, such as eating healthier, quitting smoking, or being active. They often know they should change their behaviors, yet change is difficult. And they may enjoy smoking or overeating or not being active. By helping people recognize their mixed feelings or ambivalence and the discrepancy between what they know they should do and what they actually do, it can help move them toward making positive changes. Motivational interviewing can also be a useful tool for helping workers return to work and sustain this behavior. So this is one possible strategy that RETAIN programs can use to improve return to work and stay at work goals.
Where does the concept of motivational interviewing come from?
Well, two clinical psychologists, William Miller and Stephen Rolnick, are generally credited with developing motivational interviewing. William Miller used this approach to talk with people who had substance use disorders, initially alcohol. He and Stephen Rolnick then wrote a book in 1991 entitled Motivational Interviewing, Preparing People to Change Addictive Behavior. It focused on how to talk with people about their alcohol and drug use in ways that respected the ability of people to make their own decisions about making changes. And now this technique is used by some nurses, care managers, physicians, and others to help people change behaviors.
And then as a technique, what is it about motivational interviewing that works?
Motivational interviewing involves communication strategies that help people examine their beliefs, values, and behaviors in a way that they come up with their own reasons to change. People essentially talk themselves into changing. It does not involve arguing or trying to logically convince people to change behaviors. It draws on people's own values, experiences, and hopes. It's much more effective than trying to convince someone to change. That rarely works.
And so I understand that motivational interviewing involves a set of concepts and approaches. What are these concepts?
It involves the spirit of motivational interviewing, four central principles, and four skills or techniques. The spirit of motivational interviewing includes collaboration, acceptance, evocation, and compassion. The four central principles are express empathy, roll with resistance, develop discrepancy, and support self-efficacy. And the four skills or techniques are use of open-ended questions, affirmations, reflective listening, and summaries. The acronym for these four skills is OARS, O-A-R-S. I'll review each one of these concepts separately with you.
That'll be great. And I know some of our listeners, some of the state teams, might be familiar, at least in general, with the four skill technique titled OARS. But when you talk about the spirit of motivational interviewing, that was something I know was not familiar to me. Can you tell us more about what you mean and exactly what it's referencing?
Sure. The spirit of motivational interviewing is not really techniques, but a way of being. It has more to do with how you make people feel than what you say. The spirit of motivational interviewing has the four components I mentioned, and I'll describe these from the perspective of being a clinician, but the person using motivational interviewing could be anyone on the retain team. Mm-hmm. The first is collaboration. And this involves working with clients as partners. For example, the clinician would ask permission before teaching a patient about a concept. And there is a focus on mutual understanding rather than the clinician being right. The second is acceptance. And this involves respecting the patient's autonomy. The clinician acts as a guide, but patients make their own decisions. The clinician may inform and encourage choices, but without judgment. And the clinician sees ambivalence as normal. The third is evocation, and this means that you draw out the client's thoughts and ideas by asking questions rather than telling people what to do. And the fourth is compassion, and this means that the clinician demonstrates genuine care and concern by seeking to understand others' experiences, values, and motivations without judgment. So these four concepts together are the underlying values of motivational interviewing.
Okay, that makes sense. And then you also mentioned four central principles of motivational interviewing. What are these and how can these be applied?
The four central principles of motivational interviewing are express empathy, develop discrepancy, roll with resistance, and support self-efficacy.
So let's start with empathy first. How do you express empathy within a motivational interviewing framework?
One important way that a clinician can express empathy is by using reflective listening. It's a way of conveying understanding of the patient's point of view and underlying drives or values. It generally involves listening more than talking, and this involves restating and clarifying what the person has said. It may also involve trying to understand the feelings reflected in what the person is saying, not just the stated facts or ideas. So, Jamar, let's go through one simple example of reflection.
Okay, sounds good. Let's assume that I'm a nurse who's injured my back when lifting a patient. Dr. Jacobson Van, I've been thinking about going back to work, but I'm concerned that I may re-injure my back if I go back to my current role.
It sounds like hospital work puts you at risk for further injury.
Okay, so that seems fairly straightforward as a communication technique.
Yes, reflection can be as easy as repeating one or two key words that the patient said or repeating a phrase. And it's very simple, but it often takes practice. And it's important to actively listen to people and avoid formulating that next question in your head while the patient is talking.
Mm-hmm. Which I know is difficult in even in everyday practice, right? When we're in everyday communication. And then you mentioned that the second principle is rolling with resistance. What does that entail?
Ruling with resistance is closely related to expressing empathy. When a patient talks about not changing a negative behavior, you roll with it. You don't oppose it, and you avoid arguing for change. And you also try to avoid using persuasion. So one approach is to reframe that resistance slightly to create momentum toward change. It's very important to avoid arguing for change and avoid trying to use persuasion.
Okay, but rolling with resistance sounds a lot like expressing empathy and using reflective listening. So is there really a difference between these concepts?
Well, you're right, Jamar, that there's a lot of overlap between expressing empathy and rolling with resistance. These concepts definitely overlap. However, rolling with resistance specifically involves situations when a client or patient talks about not changing behaviors.
Okay, so how would you demonstrate rolling with resistance if I say, as a patient, well, I don't plan to go to my physical therapy appointment?
I might say something like, you don't think physical therapy would work for you right now. It's a simple statement, but by rolling with resistance and reflecting that I'm showing acceptance for your perspective and choices, I'm not really challenging you. So this approach often leads to the patient taking a deeper dive into his or her beliefs and feelings, which can help move the patient a little closer to positive change.
Okay. So you've mentioned that the third motivational interviewing principle is to develop discrepancy. And what does that mean?
Well, developing discrepancy is a really key component of this approach. And it goes back to that ambivalence or mixed feelings that people may have about behavior change. And so this involves helping the patient identify or develop the discrepancy between his or her most deeply held values and the current behavior. So the goal is to identify how the current unhealthy behavior conflicts with the client's goals and values. And it's important to do this in a non-judgmental way. The approach used is called double-sided reflection. And this approach generally works best if you end that double-sided reflection with the positive change or positive statement. So let's go through one example.
Okay, great. So I'm, again, going to assume the role of a patient who is struggling with the need to be physically active. Dr. Jacobson-Van, I know that exercise is good for my health and it may give me more energy, but I work really hard. I have a family to care for and I have a lot going on. I don't have time to be physically active. It's just one more thing I'd have to add to my crazy schedule.
Jamar, it sounds like it's really hard for you to make time to be physically active. Yet you also feel that being active would help you be healthier and feel more energetic.
Okay, so that's great on the surface. That sounds similar, though, to the previous type of reflection.
It is, but in this case, it's a double-sided reflection. First, the negative perception, belief, or feeling is restated, and this is followed by the positive alternative. It's important to try to end this double-sided reflection with a positive change.
Yeah, I love that. I love ending with the positive change on a positive note. I could see how that could actually be considerably more motivational for the patient. You also mentioned that the fourth motivational interviewing principle is support self-efficacy. And what does that mean and how is that accomplished?
Self-efficacy is the person's belief in his or her ability to carry out a task and succeed. It's important that people believe they can succeed at positive behavior change. And confidence is often shown to be a predictor of change. So to help people develop self-efficacy, it can be helpful to explore what they have been successful at previously, because people generally have been successful at some things. So a simple way to support self-efficacy is to ask a simple question like, what strengths do you have that have helped you make changes in the past? Or you may acknowledge a success that the client mentioned, such as, well, you were able to quit smoking for a week in the past. What helped you quit then?
Mm-hmm.
So you can work with people to build on previous successes, even if those were very tiny successes or baby steps.
Great. So then the last set of motivational interviewing concepts that you mentioned are the skills and techniques referred to as ORS, O-A-R-S. What are these skills and how are these applied?
The basic interaction skills and techniques for motivational interviewing are the ORS, which stand for open-ended questions, affirmations, reflections, and summaries.
Mm-hmm.
Open-ended questions are used to probe and learn more about what the client has said. And often these open-ended questions start with the words what and how. For example, how important is it for you to make this change? And what are some small steps that you can take between now and when we talk again to be more active? It's important to point out that some coaching programs discourage the use of why questions because why questions are often perceived as challenging someone's beliefs or behaviors, and we don't want to do that. So we try to reframe why questions as what questions to reduce the possibility of getting a defensive response from a patient.
And then the A in OR stands for affirmations. How is this concept applied?
Affirmations are statements that recognize and reinforce success and express optimism. It's important to acknowledge any progress that a patient has achieved when coaching on behavior change. For example, you might say something like, it's great that you've taken the first step by making a plan to be active twice a week. Or it sounds like you've been making progress on your physical therapy. That's great.
And then the R in OR stands for reflections. And you've already talked about reflections. So again, I'm going to ask, is there any difference between the reflections used in expressing empathy and reflections used in this context as a technique?
Great question. There is no difference. Reflections are a major technique used in motivational interviewing. And as previously mentioned, reflections involve mirroring what the patient is saying to express empathy. It may involve repeating a few words or rephrasing a sentence, or it can involve stating what you believe the patient means. And this technique is one that should be used frequently. As another example, you might say something like, you sound really concerned that you may not be around for your children if you don't start to be more active and take better care of your health.
Okay. And then the last technique in ORS is summaries. So what is summaries and how is this technique different than reflection?
The use of summaries is another way to let the client know that you're listening and understanding. It helps to pull together a synopsis after a client has talked at length. And it can be used to help clarify what's been said. It's similar to a reflection, but it's typically longer and used less frequently.
Hmm.
For example, if someone's been talking for a while about weight management and you feel it would be helpful to verify with the client about the overall feelings or themes of the conversation, you may interject a summary. And you may say something like, I'd like to summarize what we've talked about. And you can let me know if I'm understanding your situation. Is that okay? You mentioned that you were concerned about your weight, but you're not quite certain how to get started with losing weight, yet you believe it's important for you to make some changes to get in better shape. Is that right? So the use of summaries can highlight important aspects of a discussion. They can also shift the direction of conversations that may seem to be stuck, and they can also highlight both sides of an individual's ambivalence about change using those double-sided reflections. And it also communicates interest and understanding of an individual's perspective.
Okay. So now that you've laid out the ORs, the open-ended questions, affirmations, reflective listening, and summaries as techniques, excuse the pun, but we're ready to get the boat moving. So how do you know what technique to use and when to use it?
That's another great question, Jamar. I know there are a lot of details about motivational interviewing. And the key is to really listen to what the patient has to say and try to embrace that spirit of motivational interviewing. It takes practice, and often it's helpful to just start listening more and gradually start using reflections as your main tool. And it can help to listen to some good examples of motivational interviewing and videos as one way of learning more. There's one example online that we'll share the link with you, where the physician first talks with a patient not using motivational interviewing techniques, and the second video shows this physician using the techniques. So it helps to listen to other people using the techniques. And then as people try to adopt motivational interviewing techniques, it's important to accept less than perfection in yourself and start practicing a little at a time. So again, start with listening, reflecting, and use of a few open-ended questions, starting with what and how.
That's an excellent point around the baby steps when using the techniques. And as you mentioned, we'll make sure we share the link to the online example when we post this discussion. But before we close out, I'm hoping you could provide a summary of the main points of both this discussion and more broadly, motivational interviewing.
Sure, I'd love to. Motivational interviewing is really important because health behaviors are major contributors to health, and it's often very challenging to help people make positive changes in their lives. Motivational interviewing is a communication technique or style that helps people work through their ambivalence or mixed feelings about behavior change. The four components of the spirit of motivational interviewing are collaboration, acceptance, evocation, and compassion. The four central principles are express empathy, develop discrepancy, role with resistance, and support self-efficacy. And the basic skills are those ORs, which stand for open-ended questions, affirmations, reflective listening, and summaries. So these communication skills are important for physicians, nurses, return to work coordinators, and others who want to help people achieve health goals, including stay at work and return to work goals. As basic as these techniques sound, they are powerful for helping people change behavior. Arguing and using persuasion are often not effective, but by using motivational interviewing techniques, you can help people talk themselves into changing. Mm. And in research, motivational interviewing has repeatedly been shown to make a positive difference, including in return to work and stay at work projects.
Excellent. Well, Dr. Jacobson-Van, I want to thank you for highlighting this approach and for sharing your expertise on motivational interviewing. And I hope our Retain Network finds what you shared today helpful, and they're able to apply it as they continue to implement their Retain efforts. Thank you once again, and we're glad that everyone was able to join us today.
Thank you.